We are starting the Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests, or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. In today's show, I interview Hannah Kay, who is putting on the Survivor Prom. She'll tell you all about it in the interview. We start first with a short piece by the Brendan Eder Ensemble, that's spelled E-D-E-R, Brendan Eder Ensemble, from their album Therapy. This is called Interlude. Then the interview with Hannah Kay. And we wrap up the show with music by the beloved songwriter and singer Gordon Lightfoot, who just passed. We'll hear his tunes Beautiful and If You Could Read My Mind. But first, a short calendar of events. I'm featuring the Wallace in Beverly Hills today, thewallace.org for more information. On May 18th, Bring the Noise, If These Walls Could Sing. On May 20th, Miro Quartet and special guest Kevin Putz. Then on May 24th, a screening of The Assembly, a new musical film by Hershey Felder. On May 25th, Jeffrey Kahane, Piano, The Goldberg Variations. May 28th, The Miracle Project takes the cake. And on June 1st, classical music by Jordan Back, Geneva Lewis, and Evren Ozel. All that at The Wallace in Beverly Hills, thewallace.org for more information. Okay, now to start the show, Mystic Pete Chronicles. It's April 3rd, 2023. Mystic Pete here with Hannah Kay, who is putting on the Survivor Prom October 21st, 2023. Hi, Hannah Kay.
Hi, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I saw your Instagram, another positive thing I found on social media, despite the internet being basically pure evil. No, I mean, there's like incredible things happening and wonderful people I'm finding, and I thought you would make a great guest for this radio show. Why don't I let you explain what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm putting on an event called Survivor Prom, and this event is much like, you know, any prom that someone would experience, except this one is for adults in the troubled teen industry, or who went through the troubled teen industry, as well as adults who went through cults and congregate care settings, and missed out, basically, on prom. It's one of the many experiences that people who go through these things missed out on.
they missed out on prom because they're in some kind of semi-incarceration.
Yeah.
Allegedly to help them.
Yes.
And they didn't get to go to their high school senior prom.
Yeah. I mean, they missed out on so much more than that. I mean, they missed out on their sweet 16s. They missed out on their graduations, not to mention, you know, the possibility of developing appropriate social skills and conflict resolution, working as a part of a team. You know, these people were in environments where it was more of a dog-eat-dog world. You know, they were punished for making friends in a lot of circumstances. So it's not just about the abuse that they endured while going through the troubled teen industry or through a cult, but it's about what they missed by not having that normal experience.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to, like, at least symbolically help people rebuild, help people feel normal, and regain that nice flow to life that hopefully most young people have. Well, let's slow down a bit here and let's talk about these areas. Let's start first with the troubled teen industry. I don't think a whole lot of people know about what's going on. I mean, people may not even have heard about this. Sure. So please explain that.
Yeah. So the troubled teen industry, in a nutshell, is an industry that is aimed or claims to help troubled teens. And troubled might mean that they're depressed or that they are suicidal or that they're anxious or that they're skipping school or, you know, whatever that word, whatever that is.
Like, me. Okay. And like everyone I knew.
Yeah.
Just those people.
Like basically the normal teenage experience.
Okay. Everyone who's a teenager.
It's actually really important for me to say that, like, these are not criminals. These are not children who are, you know, supposed to be in juvie. These are just kids whose parents determined that they were troubled for some reason and require some kind of residential treatment to resolve that.
Yeah, and juvenile, just not to interrupt you, but the whole juvenile hall system is a monstrosity.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of abuse in this, but it just gets even uglier with all that stuff. We're not even going to get into that today, but keep going.
Yeah, so parents actually pay somebody, transporters in most cases, to pick up these children, and usually in the middle of the night, out of their beds. These kids don't know anybody is coming. Oftentimes under the threat of being physically restrained with handcuffs or ties. I've seen belts used. I've seen boots used. Put a boot on the child so that they cannot run away. And then they're just taken.
Like the kind you put on a car? Yeah, boot your child. Okay.
And then they're just taken. And we call this gooning, legal kidnapping. You know, these are all terms that survivors use for this process, but it's very, very common.
Yanking someone out of their life.
Yeah, just yanking them out of in the middle of the night. And for a child, I mean, it may be legal in terms of their parents said, yes, you can take my child. But for the child, it's no different than regular kidnapping. You know, that experience is the same. It's terrifying. Two people come into your bedroom while you're sleeping and grab you out of your bed. It's terrifying.
Jeez.
In my case, they made me change my clothes in front of them. And then...
Oh, stripped naked?
Yeah, they
in front
had
of
me
a
change,
couple of
Yeah, they had me change
males.
Out of my... It was a man and a woman in
okay.
my case.
Jeez.
But they had me change my clothes in front of them. And then escorted me out, and it wasn't until I was downstairs that I caught a brief view of my mother, like, crying in the kitchen, but they are actually told not to talk to you. Your parents are not allowed to talk to you at that point.
Because no goodbye, no.
They're afraid that the child's going to say, please don't let them tag me, I'll be good, you know? They think we're going to manipulate them out of not being taken. So the programs actually instruct parents not to address their children.
And weaken their resolve. So
exactly.
It isolate totally. The child from the parent while they're being yanked out of their life.
Absolutely.
And the crying mom, and oh my God, okay.
Yeah, it was horrifying. I remember it clear as day.
The start of...
Just the start, yeah. And that's why I say it's an inherently abusive industry, because whatever I'm going to tell you next, sure, it's going to be abusive. Some people will say, well, that didn't happen at my program. I'm like, did you get ripped out of your bed in the middle of the night? Because that's traumatizing for a child. I mean, I was a week before my 13th birthday, so this was a 12-year-old little girl that this was happening to. And I lived in California at the time, and they took me out of my parents' house, and they put me in the back of a red Camaro, but it had the whole police cage in the back, so I was, like, in the police cage, essentially. They had computers up front. I didn't know who they were, where I was going, anything like that.
As far as you were concerned, you were actually being kidnapped. You didn't know if this was like a criminal thing and your parents were being held. So you had no idea what was going on?
No idea what was going on.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, that's why I say it's like, you can call it legal kidnapping, but for the child, the experience is exactly the same. Like, we don't know what's going on. It's very, especially a young child. I thought, oh my gosh, what have I done that these people are taking me out of my house? I didn't think that I was going to like some type of treatment facility at all. And then they took me to an airport. Again, I lived in California, and I went through two planes until I landed in Florida, is where my program was. So by the time I was there, the transporters kind of had started telling me, like, oh, you're going somewhere. And I was like, okay, I'm going somewhere. I'm going to, like, a school. I'm going to, like, a rehab. Like, where am I going? And they pulled up to my facility, which was called Lighthouse Christian Academy.
A lighthouse.
Yes, it was a religious program. So there's a lot of different programs out there. There are wilderness programs. There are religious programs. There are boot camps. There are rehabs, behavior modification facilities. They're all kind of under this umbrella of the troubled teen industry because they all kind of serve that community. And mine was a religious program. And when they pulled me up to this place, I thought I was at an Amish school of sorts because they came out in these giant long, what we call jumpers that are like muumuu type things. And very long skirts and dresses. And I thought it was
kind of asexual.
It was very strange. Right, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say asexual, but it was very, very ultra conservative and strange to me. And we were in the middle of nowhere. It was just peanut fields and cotton fields. Oof. Like no really community. It ended up being a town, I think, of like 1,000 people that lived there. Very, very small. And yeah, so my first experience was showing up there. And again, they took me back to the showers and body searched me, had me stripped naked, and they checked to see if I was like harboring anything, I guess. Again, 12-year-old girl. And then I had to get in the shower. And while I was in the shower, they took my clothes from me. So at that point, it was like the last shred of my own stuff that I had, they took from me. And they sneak in there while you're in the shower and take your stuff out. And that was like what they always did. Yeah.
Sinister.
Yeah. So crazy, crazy start to that whole experience for me. After that, it's just like, you know, I went to a church service. Suddenly it was just like I was in a church service because this was a religious program where we went to church 3 times a day. And then I went to bed that night. And, the next morning I would wake up and begin to learn the million little rules that they have in this place. You know, the troubled teen industry, there are things that are like very big, obvious abuses that like we'll get into, but it's also an industry that is death by a thousand cuts. It's an entire, like you and I were talking before the show, you know, it's an entire world of its own that everybody kind of has to learn to live in. And waking up that first morning and getting that rule book and kind of figuring out where my place was in that world was shocking.
Super control.
Yeah.
Like every aspect of your life is now controlled. And I'm guessing the consequences for breaking a rule are severe.
Yeah. So, I mean, this was a place where, you know, immediately there's, you know, you can't wear pants. Women are always wearing skirts. And the place of a woman is very, like, a submissive thing to men. And, like, I could not even say the word pants. Like, I wasn't allowed to use the word pants. I couldn't say the word cool. I couldn't, like, that's, like, worldly slang that you can't say.
So, language control.
Yeah, language control, 1,000%.
lot of jargon.
Not just even the jargon, but just I wasn't allowed to speak like 22 hours out of the day. And that's on good terms with the program.
Oh, you're not allowed to speak.
You're actually not allowed to speak. So, and that's a reason that a lot of people who are involved with advocacy in the troubled teen industry, we talk about Breaking Code Silence, which is a big movement, that is, referring to the code of silence that a lot of these programs have where you are not allowed to speak. Same goes for Unsilence, which is another nonprofit organization aimed at ending or regulating the troubled teen industry. And yeah, it all refers to the code of silence, which pretty much every program, no matter what kind of program it is, has some level of this. And so for my program, it's so complex to kind of describe. I'll try to shorten it up. There's only about, I would say, 4 hours in a day, just guessing cumulatively, that we would be allowed to speak. However, there's also rules about who you're allowed to speak to. It greatly is determined by, you know, how compliant with the program you and I are. We also would have to have what it was called a listener. So there's people in the program who were like so high up in the program that they were the only ones allowed to sit here while you and I are having this interview and listen to us talk, so that if we said something we weren't allowed to say, they could go get us in trouble. Or write us, you know, a demerit or whatever. So their primary punishment at our program was what they called demerits or sentences. So you'd have like a day to write 500 sentences, usually like a scripture verse or something of that nature. But it also escalated really quickly into things like isolation. So we had like an isolation box of sorts, like if you've seen like movies, like, you know what I'm talking about?
Cool Hand Luke. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen that, but yes. Yeah, they put you in a box.
Essentially, yeah. I mean, this one's, you know, inside, and it's basically like a 5 by 5 foot white room of sorts. It doesn't have a door on it, and they would take a table and push it up against the entryway of this door, and then they would have two people, students, sit there, and their job is, again, to watch you and make sure that you're not laying down, because you wouldn't be allowed to lay down in it. You're only allowed to like sit straight up in it and do nothing else. And it's a minimum, if you were sent there, you'd be there for a minimum of 3 days. And there's no bathroom, so they would have to periodically take you to the bathroom, but you never got to decide. So people would, you know, urinate on themselves in there all the time and other things.
Thinking of the older students who are now required to be the minders and policemen. So they're becoming the overlords. Mm-hmm. And how distorting that must be when you have to play the role of your captors.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
that's how these programs are, though. They're so understaffed. The staff for these programs, you know, incredibly uneducated. They have no credentials whatsoever, no licenses. It's not like my program was licensed by the state of Florida to operate. It wasn't. In fact, the woman who was in charge of determining whether or not I got medical care didn't have a high school diploma, and she was in her 20s. I mean, that's the kind of town, and she was from the town. Like, that's the kind of town and people that they had in charge of us.
Total irresponsibility.
Yes.
People in charge of allegedly troubled youth, mm-hmm. who don't know what they're doing. Yeah. And it's just chaos. I mean, that alone, it's an outrage.
Yes.
That simple fact that nobody knows what they're doing.
And that's why I say it's like, it's death by a thousand cuts, because there's so many things that people are like, oh, that's kind of crazy. But there's also like a billion other things that we won't even get to today.
Well, so let's go to the bottom floor here. So sure. say Hannah Kay here, mm-hmm. you know, is speaking out of turn, saying things. She gets thrown in the hole, you know, in the room.
Yeah.
And what if Hannah Kay starts to rebel, starts to yell, throw things, pee in the corner? Like, mm-hmm. no, I'm not having any. Like, what if you get worse?
So,
and what goes from there?
So it's called flooring is what's next. And that's actually why we so often were forced to police each other, was because they simply didn't have the numbers. Like, so they would force us to, it's called flooring, and that is physically restraining students. And what they would do is they'd have at least two students, usually four or five, they tackle you to the ground. So wherever you are, they're going to put you on the ground. They're going to lay you flat, face down. And then they're physically going to sit on the back of your body. Like, they're going to take full human beings and sit them on you. Like,
for hours and hours? What if we
sometimes keep for hours
resisting and throwing a fit? I mean,
keeps going. I've seen handcuffs used at my program. Personally seen this with my eyes. I've seen, I was forced to literally hold other students, my friends, or people I wish I could have been friends with. I've literally had to hold their limbs down to their bed. And this is ridiculous.
Or that happens to you.
Or that, and it did happen to me.
Like, if you didn't do what they said for you to do, to damage these, then you would get punished. Yes. Good God.
Yes. So, they used us to police each other. And it's funny because I'm friends with so many of the girls that I went to my program with now. And, you know, there's no grudges there. We're all like, I get it. I know that you had to do that. Like,
part of the system. Yeah, you're all part of this distorted.
Nobody even thinks twice about it.
I see. And so after you've been chained, bound, shackled, tackled for hours and hours enough, you break. You give up. You give up. At some point you say, I can't be handcuffed anymore. Yeah. And you start obeying at some level.
Correct. Correct. Absolutely.
I see. So it's just a bullying at the most.
And that's what's funny because oftentimes I have parents and they ask me, well, what, I don't know what to do with my child. What should I do with them? And I'm like, I'm not sure. I'm not a professional. You know, I'm not a social worker. I'm not a medical professional. I'm not a psychologist. But what I can tell you is that this industry is inherently abusive. And if you're looking into it, I urge you to ask yourself what you think the program has that you haven't already tried. And the answer is they abuse children into submission. That's what it is. And that's why when children get out of the program, oftentimes they go right back to whatever behavior they were doing before, because the only reason they stopped doing it at the program is because they were under threat of, you name it, not having butter for toast for 3 years. You know, like, it's all these little things that they were like, well, my life would just be better if I just obeyed while I'm here. And that's what happens. People get in line while they're at the program because they're trying to survive.
You're being bullied. Yeah. You're being tortured.
Totally.
And you just do the minimum you have to get by. Maybe... Yeah. A few people change their ways, but for the most part, you come out even more damaged than you went in.
Absolutely.
And deep emotional and psychological scars, probably a lot of suicides, mm-hmm. and people who are just not at all prepared for normal society.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's just an abomination.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more about people who are just unprepared. And that's kind of why I talk about, even with Survivor Prom, is when I got out of my program, I always tell people the day that I finally got out, they unlocked the doors, because this is a completely closed, like, you can't go outside. It's not like that. It's magnetized. Everything's magnetized.
It's a locked facility.
It's a locked
you
facility.
You can't leave.
You can't even leave rooms. Like, it's fully locked, so... and it was like 1 hour a day outside if you're lucky. A lot of people didn't go outside at all. I didn't go outside for the last 9 months I was there. But that's a different story. Why was I telling you that? I got distracted. Sorry. Oh, I was saying people being unprepared. So that's why I talk about Survivor Prom is like people don't realize how much the high school experience like formed who they are as a person. And I think in theory, like in word, a lot of people will acknowledge it. I think it's not till I really break it down. I'm like, How much do you think you learn just being part of like a sports team or like finding an elective that like turned into like this lifelong passion of yours and like you had arts or music or you know, all these things that you got to experience in high school, and there's generations of people who never had any of that, who didn't even have teachers to encourage them. Like, we taught ourselves. A lot of programs are like you get workbooks and you do your own work if you're lucky. Some didn't even have that. So it's like there's so much that you learn in high school that prepares you for adult life, and we didn't have that. So a lot of people in our community, when they get out of their programs, they're suffering. Like, they are not capable of, like, holding a job or, like, maintaining friendships because they were in a, like, in my program, we weren't even allowed to have friends. If I was caught talking to you 3 days in a row, we would be put on a rule that meant we couldn't even look at each other or talk to each other or say, I couldn't say your name around other people, and vice versa. Like, it completely discouraged friendships. It discouraged emotional outlet. Like, you couldn't ball your fists or like cry too loud or like anything like that. You would be punished. So it's just a total control scenario, and that results in the outcome of that is adults who are not prepared for day-to-day life.
Stunted. It produces emotionally stunted, socially stunted people.
Yes.
Wow. Good job.
Good job.
Thank you for improving society. One of the most obvious things about this to me is, like, at this age, young people are going through puberty and they are learning how to date and mate. And in high school, you know, as awful as this is for, well, for me, no, I mean, like, you know, as difficult it is to learn to talk to and relate to the opposite sex, or like, sure, like all these rituals and ways to get, which you get through in high school, yeah, and presumably come out with a little bit of style. So how is this issue of human sexuality dealt with in this program? Like, that's like one of the main things you're learning in high school.
Sure, yeah. So for my program, because it was a religious program, probably very different. My program was all girls. So there were no boys there whatsoever. But there were also girls.
And I'm sure they encouraged lesbianism.
That's what I was going to get into. Yeah.
Okay, I
that's what I was going to say. There's also girls. No, you're good.
Stole the punchline.
There's also girls who were gay or who were bi, and it was heavily punished. You know, this program was about stripping you of your identity, of who you are, and making you a number. I literally had my number tattooed on my lip because I was dumb and got that tattoo when I was...
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So like you're...
Rebel.
You literally just become a number to these people. They don't want you to... Even people who came, we had students come from like British Virgin Islands, and they have their own culture and their own way of talking, and they were punished for speaking the way that they speak.
That dialect.
You can't speak any other languages, you know, like, it was about stripping you of everything to do with your identity, including your sexuality. So if you came in and you were gay or bi, you know, that was going to be punished. You were never going to get out of this program if you didn't denounce that. It just wasn't going to happen for you. So oftentimes students, you know, we would comply and try to show that we were with the program in an attempt to just get the staff to believe us, because at our program, being a religious program, was completely arbitrary when you were going to get to leave. A lot of troubled teen programs out there, they have levels or they have steps, and they say, once you get through these steps, then you graduate from the program. Ours didn't have that. We didn't have anything like that. There was no, memorize these 6 books of the Bible and then you can leave. It was like completely arbitrary, completely up to you to convince the staff that you had changed. And the best way to do that was to be like, okay, I'm a Christian now, and I believe this now. And they would teach us that all other they would teach us Catholicism is a cult. Now, I'm not religious these days, as you probably could guess, but I don't believe Catholicism is a cult. But that's what they would teach us. They literally had a class and would teach us about other religions and why they were cults and why they were so terrible and why
going
spirituality was so... Yeah, everyone's going to hell. They would tell us horror stories about little girls our age who died in accidents and would scream about the flames of hell and just traumatize us. Even when we were in the isolation box, they would come and they would bring like Lester Roloff and like other preachers and just play them on cassette tapes on like full blast while we were in isolation, and that's all you could like hear for like 3 days, and it was like very traumatizing. Yeah, no, I mean,
just everything you're saying is just sounds so awful, so invasive.
Yeah, I mean,
this loud, awful preaching for
screaming about fire and brimstone.
My God.
For days. And if you were in there watching somebody, you'd have to listen to it too. So.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
Ouch.
Yeah, so
I don't know why it's the most disturbing thing so far. No, it just like
they knew it was disturbing too. They knew that it was disturbing because we would joke about it.
It's punitive. Their point is punishment.
Yes, absolutely. Tough love is what they call it.
But then, just to conclude that issue about human sexuality, so you mm-hmm. come out not only emotionally and socially stunted, but romantically, like you're 18 or whatever, you want to start a family and find a mate. Family values, totally. It sets you back, and you come into your 20s and you don't know what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so thanks, family values guys. Good. Well done.
Thanks. Good job, guys. Well done. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I think about the day that I left my program, and people always ask me, like, how was that for you? Like, was that just the best moment of your life? And I remember thinking, prior up to that point, this is going to be the best moment of my life. When I walk out, they're going to unlock the doors, I'm going to walk out, and I just remember thinking, I'm going to feel free. That's what I thought I would feel. And they opened those doors, and I walked out, and it was the saddest moment of my life, because I realized I absolutely don't feel any better. I absolutely don't feel free. I'm taking all of this darkness home with me.
Whew.
That's what it was. It was devastating. Probably the most devastating moment of that entire experience was walking out and realizing, like, this is not staying here. You know?
Wow. Wow, Hannah Kay. And really, the only way to survive this kind of long-term abuse is to go numb. You just have to turn...
Yes.
You have to completely turn off your emotions and not feel... And you're walking out of there a zombie.
Yes.
You're walking out numb. And as many years as it's going to take double that number of years to feel again.
Totally.
And to start sensing life and
yeah.
turn on all these abilities that have been turned off to protect yourself. Yeah, so that last day of leave. And now you have to go back to your family, and such a kind of existential crisis, like, these people put me here. These people are responsible for this horrible... Like that's a whole other discussion. How do you even, like, get along with your family after
sure.
that monstrosity, you know?
Yeah. I mean, for me, so again, because my program was religious and because I was trying to get out of it as quickly as possible and, like, comply, I actually became religious while I was there. I was fully brainwashed into accepting their religion, their very extreme version of Christianity, and I was fully brainwashed. I first off was crying before I left because I was convinced that I was going to be killed by people in the world because they had made me so fearful of the outside world. I didn't go outside for the last 9 months, that was my choice. I just didn't even go out in the yard for like 9 months as my choice, and that's because I wanted to do my schoolwork and kind of like move past everything. But when I did get out, I actually went to a very, like, the boot camp of Christian colleges for a couple months before I turned 18, or just coming up on 18. And right around my 18th birthday, you know, where I'm an adult now, I'm legal, I have to take care of myself. I just had like a full mental, physical, like, breakdown. Mm-hmm. I had never had anxiety in my life up until this point. I had never had a panic attack in my life up until this point. I had some depression, and I had no symptoms of PTSD until this point. And I had been hospitalized, like, 3 times within 2 months, maybe, with, like, massive anxiety and panic attacks. My immune system was going crazy. Mm-hmm. They couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. I was on isolation. To this day, they still haven't, like, nobody's told me what it was that was wrong with me, but I was so young, and I didn't know to ask. And so I was just, like, so unprepared for being an adult and taking care of my own sudden medical needs. And at that point, I said, I need to go back to California and get away from this college. And that's when I came home. And, you know, started doing a lot of the stuff that I did, you know, before, just, like, messing around with my friends, getting into trouble, and my parents kicked me out. So I was 18 and homeless, effectively, at that point, and kind of had to figure out what I was going to do from there with no cell phone, no ID. I had clothes and a trash bag, and that was pretty much all that I owned at that point. And that's, you know, that's just what happens sometimes to a lot of kids who get out of the programs, and their parents are expecting this completely changed child. And for me, I didn't even feel like I had a relationship with my parents. Like, you mentioned, oh, like, how do you even forgive them? How do you interact with them ever again? I'm like, I left when I was 12, and now I'm 18. I'm like, I don't even know you guys. Like,
these are strangers.
My whole family felt like strangers to me. And it's funny because I have 3 sisters, and I say the same thing to them. I'm like, why are you talking to me like I'm some kid? I'm like, I don't even know you. It's so strange to me. But, you know, they're my older sisters, so they're just like, this is my kid. This is my kid sister, whatever. But for me, it was very strange because I didn't feel like I knew my family. You know, I'd been gone for 4 years, so I didn't have any friends in California anymore. Everyone had grown up and forgotten about me.
There was no social network.
I had nothing back here, so it was a very weird experience.
Isolated. And a young woman kind of homeless. Now, there's a whole range of danger you're exposed to.
Totally.
No resources, no friends. Oh, my God.
And
now, like, the wreckage after the wreckage, kind of like, deal with all this complexity of life, Hannah Kay.
And I was very lucky in that, like, I've always been a very, like, determined person, and I persevere a lot, and I managed to, like, make friends, sleep on somebody's couch for a while until do chores until I could buy a laptop and then, you know, find a job that, and I started, I somehow bought a car without a driver's license because nobody had ever taught me to drive. Taught myself how to drive, put myself in college, community college, and somehow I'm managed to pull it all together. But I'm one of the lucky ones, I have to say.
You pulled it together through the sheer force of your will and because your perceptive intelligence, and you're not going to let them break you, right?
Yeah, that was definitely it.
You did it. Look at the fist bump. Okay, radio fist bump. Well, look at that. So, despite all odds and through no help from these troubled teen horrors, you survived. And as you say, you're one of the lucky ones. Mm-hmm. And you can just see how many people come out of this just torn up and probably years of wreckage.
Oh, yeah.
What was the horrible thing you did to get your parents to send you off to this? I mean, you must have been like an absolute terrible, terrible being at 12.
So I'll say this. There are a lot of people who went to troubled teen programs who literally, like, spilt the milk at the dinner table. Like, there's really no reason that they should have been sent there. Actually, I take that back. There's no reason any child should ever be sent to one of these places. There's no reason Period. Any child should ever be sent to one of these places. But I was a little bit of a troublemaker, I must admit. I was not an easy child to deal with.
Okay.
I was getting kicked out of schools and running away and sneaking out, which some of that is kind of still in the realm of normal teenage experience, I think. But I was pretty difficult to handle. And my parents admittedly did try to put me in therapy and they did try to medicate me at one point in time. And I just wasn't having it. You know, I just didn't want to participate in any type of help. But my parents and my family, they're actually good people. They're not abusive. It's not like I have this, like, horrible home life that caused me to behave that way. I wish I could say why I did, but I just don't really know. So I kind of chop it up to being a teenager sometimes, just a little bit extra. So my parents just wanted somewhere that they felt could contain me. So that's why they chose to end up sending me to that program. That's not to say that they don't regret it now. They do. The programs are very manipulative, not just to the students or the peers or the children, but also to the parents. You know, my parents knew that there was a timeout room, as they called the isolation box, but they were also told, oh, we only put kids in there if they're trying to hurt somebody or if they're going to hurt themselves. Well, they put kids in there for picking their fingernails, okay? Like, that's the reality of it. But I can understand when people are like, oh, if in extreme circumstances, if a child's hurting themselves, we put them in there to cool down. I could see a lot of parents being fooled by that line, right? Like, because there is some kind of intervention that needs to happen if a child's trying to hurt themselves or somebody else, right? So
they don't tell you they're going to be bound and shackled.
They don't tell you all that extra stuff.
For days and...
I mean, literally, like I said, I've seen girls be put in there for picking their fingernails. Like, that's absolutely ridiculous. That's not intervention that needs to happen. And I'm actually not... when parents ask me, you know, what would I do with my child? I say, well, short-term crisis intervention. Short-term crisis intervention. That's something that you would do if your child's going to hurt themselves or hurt somebody else. Like, and that's usually where parents are like, oh, I'm at this point with my kid. I'm like, well, they need short-term intervention. But children, it's been proven, always do best when they're in the home. It should always be with the aim of returning the child to the home as quickly as possible, not taking them out of their family unit for 4 years.
So there may be some mild form of what's happening egregiously that is needed, carefully monitored, responsible people in charge for brief periods of time for kids who are really in trouble. They just need a little bit of support.
I think of it only as like short term. So like in medical settings, not random programs that are unaccredited, unlicensed, like medical settings that require that can intervene with a child in ways to protect them and to protect other people. If your kid just has bad behavior, they don't need to go to a hospital. They don't need to be taken out of their home.
Gotcha.
You know, but if they're going to hurt themselves or hurt somebody else, obviously there's some kind of intervention that is needed.
So let me bring this to the... Well, this is what I like to do with my radio shows, is ask the big questions, and this is really beyond the scope of the interview, but we can, like, speculate.
No, go
but
on.
I'm going to bring this up anyway, and that's the larger situation. Like, what kind of breakdown is happening in society? Well, there's two big issues. One, there's teenagers, and look, it's a hard time of life. It's hard for teenagers, and it's hard for parents. So just the question is, what's happening that there's so few options for young people, and for young people who are alienated, who are changing, who are rebellious, who are just being teens, you know, they're not criminals. Like, there has to be other avenues for them to choose where they can kind of get out all of this intense energy. Sometimes it's even violent energy, or it's very sexual energy, you know, they want, but we have to have options. I mean, just thinking, you know, tribal times, you know, here's a spear god in the woods and survive for, like, there were initiation rites. I'm not trying to be simplistic here
and offer
so. I'm just saying, like, there needs to be more options and more support for families. Like, okay, you got a teenager now that's this wild beast, but maybe wise people kind of know a little better how to relax and support you. Like there's support systems that can be in place for families who are struggling to deal with this new complicated situation.
Yeah.
Maybe drugs are involved, or, you know, maybe they're shoplifting and this and that. So there needs to be support for families and for teenagers in the most expansive way. That's the opposite of punitive.
Yeah.
That gives options, that talking and communication, and let's find some some way to help and put energy in the system and not just crush people. So that's one big breakdown of society that's this situation is pointing to.
Yeah.
And then the other one is, like, okay, when we need some kind of, like, serious intervention,
sure,
like, things are getting a little dangerous now,
sure,
and we really need to do something. And you said, okay, sure, but, like, this, like, talk about this religious group. Like, what kind of religions do we have, first, that believe all this crazy stuff, second, that are so punitive, third, that are so awful to young people, and four, that are so irresponsible by hiring, like, these nincompoops that don't know what they're doing? Like, religion? Who are these people?
Yeah. Well, first I'll say that in terms of, like, getting kids help, because that's always going to be a real problem, right? So there's a lot of things that you can do, and I don't have the full list, but I will say that you can find a list. If there's parents out there who are like, my kid's out of control, I need options, there's a nonprofit called Unsilenced, and they have a plethora of resources and other options besides residential treatment on their website. So if you go to unsilenced.org, you can see a list of alternative treatment options to residential care.
Oh, so this is good.
Yeah.
You're actually answering my big philosophical question.
Oh.
You're saying there is support for families and teens and so forth to give people options in a positive way. Say it again.
Yeah, it's unsilenced.org. And they have a tab that says for parents. And it's got all kinds of resources for parents who are looking for alternative, safe options for their children.
Love it. Okay, somebody's got an
answer. So that's a great starting point. But it's also like parents often say, well, I've tried everything. And I'm like, I promise you, you haven't.
Yeah.
You know, look at that list. Try more than just forcing your child to do therapy. Kind of like you said, involve the child in making decisions about their own life. Like, in reality, a lot of these issues, I think, come from the home. I can't make that judgment call because I actually had a decent home life. But a lot of people, a lot of survivors report that they had incredibly abusive parents. A lot of people are foster kids or adopted kids who got dumped and never seen again. Like, they literally were dumped there until they're 18. They never came back for them.
And this is whole other kinds
of
problems.
It's all these different industries that kind of intersect. And that's why Survivor Prom is for congregate care, cult, and troubled teen survivors, because they're really three different worlds that kind of intersect a lot and have a lot of the same issues.
By the way, I want you to finish what you're saying, but what is congregate care?
So congregate care settings, it's just a term we like to use sometimes in replacement for troubled teen, because not everyone was a troubled teen. It's just like boarding schools and residential settings where a bunch of people are living together. That's essentially what that is. It could even encompass other things that are not necessarily relevant to missing prom, like old folks homes or like whatever. That would also be considered a congregate care setting, but we just use that term because it's a little bit more inclusive for people who don't feel like they were a troubled teen.
And sometimes this can get abusive. People in charge who don't know what they're doing, underfunded, crazy, dominating, punitive care.
No oversight.
Yeah, so things should go seriously awry in these congregate care
dozens
settings.
Dozens of children have died, just for the record.
Gotcha. Yeah. And because, again, to the big Mystic Pete questions, is like, yeah, society doesn't know what to do with a lot of this stuff. So, oh, you have an answer here. Well, here's a few bucks. Here are these weirdo people. Deal with them. And we don't, you know, wash your hands of it. We don't, you handle it. And what do you know? They make everything much worse. So congregate care is this umbrella term.
Sure.
Got it. And then cults. Well, okay, that's
given.
Another few radio shows. But I don't know that, I did interrupt you, and you were starting to talk about options. And
yeah, so you can find those options on unsounds.org, and that's great for if you're looking for alternative treatment options for your teen. And just involving them, I think, is really important to the process, and will help a lot. When you force a child to do anything, it's very aggressive. It says there's something wrong with you, right? But when you involve the child in the process, I think it goes a long way. Now, I'm not a counselor, I'm not a psychologist, but that's just my personal
opinion. So you're not trying to even answer things, but you're pointing out what the problem is, and we need to figure out answers.
Sure.
As a society.
Yeah. And just to identify that congregate care settings or troubled teen industry is not a solution. Like, I may not have all the answers, but I can come here and tell you, you know, I have hundreds of programs that I've researched and hundreds, if not thousands, of survivors that I've talked to over the years. And I'm like, this is not a solution, I promise you. Even if there are people who went to residential centers or troubled teen facilities and they're like, I don't feel abused. I'm like, cool, did you get kidnapped? I'm like, did you get put in an isolation box? Yeah, I'm really glad you don't feel abused, but that's still child abuse. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm so happy you don't feel the effects of what happened to you, but child abuse is not a feeling. You know, and that's something that's very common in all of these programs. And like we talked about earlier, like virtually no regulation. There's a lot of bills kind of floating around that people are trying to. We did one in Utah a couple years ago, and Montana we've been working on, and we've been in D.C. with Paris Hilton, who's very large, big on this issue.
Really?
Okay. She went to a bunch of these programs.
Oh, yeah.
She's been in D.C. working with Unsilenced and Breaking Code Silence and all these nonprofits trying to raise awareness of this issue and encourage legislators to kind of, like, bind together and, like, address this issue. So that's another thing that we've kind of been trying to do to help educate people, but it's slow burn.
So, kind of in summation, some of these difficult issues, legitimately difficult issues, teens who are having trouble, you know, if the way society deals with it by shunting them off to some easy solution with these people, just trust me, and it doesn't help. It just turns everything into a catastrophe. There has to be wisdom. People have to take time. There has to be plenty of resources and options. And there has to be wisdom and a kind and gentle and caring approach. There's no lever we can pull to solve these underlying issues of maturation and psychology and emotions.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Well said.
Well, just in conclusion, let's talk about the beautiful life that Hannah Kay is building, one of the success stories of someone who is really treated awfully. So just a word about your life now.
Once I got my stuff together and I got off the streets, I went to college and I got a degree in business administration. I became the COO of an art company out of Irvine for a few years, and then I moved on to actually opening my own business, which you might find a little ironic. It is an escape room.
So
I own, I have three 3, almost 4 escape rooms, and that's kind of my jam now. I build escape rooms. I'm also opening a rage room within the next year, if you know what that is. It's like you go in...
Emotional processing. Yes. Yeah.
You go in, you break stuff.
In a fun way.
You work it out. So, yeah, you know, kind of between all my advocacy work and trying to raise awareness of the troubled teen industry, I kind of just have fun.
You're easy to find on social media under Survivor Prom. Mm-hmm. And you are doing an actual Survivor Prom. What a sweet thing. October 21st, 2023.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate your time today. I appreciate you having me here.
Thanks so much for coming.
Yeah, absolutely. You have a good one.
Times I just don't know how you could be anything but beautiful. Think that I'm made for you, and you were made for me. And I know that I will never change. We've been friends, rain or shine, for such a long, long time. Laughing eyes and smiling face, it seems so lucky just to have the right. Telling you with all my might, beautiful tonight. And I know that you'll never stray, 'cause you've been that way from day to day for such a long, long time. And when me tight, how could life be anything but beautiful? Think that I was made for you, and you were made for me. And I know that I will never change. We've been friends, rain or shine, for such a long, long time. Well, I must say, it means so much to me to be the one that's telling you I'm telling you that you're beautiful. Tell just like an old time movie about a ghost from a wishing well, in a castle dark or a fortress strong, with chains upon my feet. You know that ghost is me, and I will never be set free as long as I'm a ghost you can't see. If I could read your mind, love, what a tale your thoughts could tell. Just like a paperback novel, the kind the drugstores sell. When you reach the part where the heartaches come, the hero would be me. Heroes often fail. And you won't read that book again, because the ending's just too hard to take. I'd walk away like a movie star who gets burned in a three-way script. Enter number two, a movie queen to play the scene of bringing all the good things out in me. But for now, love, let's be real. Never thought I could act this way, and I've got to say that I just don't get it. I don't know where we went wrong, but the feeling's gone, and I just can't get it back. If you could read my mind, love, what a tale my thoughts could tell. Just like an old-time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark or a fortress strong, with chains upon my feet, the story's always in. If you read between the lines, you'll know that I'm just trying to understand the feelings that you lack. I never thought I could feel this way, and I've got to say that I just don't get it. I don't know where we went wrong, but the feeling's gone, and I just can't get it back.
Coming to the end of the Mystic Pete Chronicles. You can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. Today, an interview with Hannah Kay, who's putting on the Survivor Prom in October. And we just wrapped it up with a couple of tunes by the beloved Gordon Lightfoot that was beautiful. And if you could read my mind, you will be missed. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with the best of talk radio. Mystic Pete out.